Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, dedicated to those who believe a car should stir one's emotions and deliver a heightened state of driving. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. After years of constant growth, Charlotte recently became the 15th largest city in the country by population, and the evidence of that is everywhere you look. Office towers, apartment high-rises, apartment mid-rises, they've gone up and continue to be built as more and more people arrive every day. They're coming here for jobs, and because Charlotte has become known for its quality of life and for the kind of environment that young people want to live and work in. At least that has been the prevailing school of thought, but now something new has entered the picture, COVID-19, and calls for racial justice. In the past, increasing urbanization has perpetuated segregation and inequity, while the pandemic has moved people out of offices to work from home, and some businesses may be rethinking their need for so much office space. And if workers can work from home, do they really need to be so close to their office building in the urbanized, densified central core? These are issues that many city planners are thinking about right now, as is Charlotte's. But Taiwo Jioba believes we have an opportunity here, and we've asked him to explore that and other topics with us this hour. Taiwo Jioba, welcome back to the program.
Thank you, Mike.
In addition to becoming the 15th largest city in the country in the last several months, we rank in the top 10 cities nationwide in terms of net migration, in-migration. And many of those moving here are between the ages of 25 and 39. But millennials have a propensity for moving a lot. They change jobs a lot. They change apartments and domiciles a lot. They change cities a lot, it seems to me. So knowing that, how does that impact your planning for today and the future?
Of course. Thank you for that question, Mike. One thing that you may not be aware of is that last week, Smart Asset actually said that we are number 5 in the country for the very same reason, millennials. Just in the last 1 week alone, I've heard from two different millennials who are looking to move into Charlotte, one from New York, one from Chicago. So obviously we are growing, and that's a good thing. Sometimes it can also be very bad, because if we don't manage it very well, then it becomes very disillusioning for people. And so that's something we've been working on as part of our comprehensive plan, obviously, to integrate development and movement together, whether it's development of buildings and facilities, but also movement of people in between those places. But now it's even more so with the pandemic, that we have to make sure that we plan not just for millennials, but even our seniors and everyone in between.
You know, COVID-19 came in and tanked a booming economy, and it threw a lot of people out of work. And as I said at the beginning, a lot of those who maintain their jobs no longer go to a place to work. They do it from home, which has given them ideas on, they've discovered that they can do that. And a lot of employers have discovered, hey, this can be done. So why do we need this office space? That's a lot of expenditure. When did you think, as a city planner, when did you think that COVID-19 is something that you needed to address as a planner going forward?
So you know that most of our planning ideas and concepts that we see today came out of previous public health crises, whether it was the influenza in the 1918s, or it was even the issues that we had public health-wise in Europe before then. A lot of places that we see today, whether it's the public parks in New York or in Boston or in major parts of the world, were in response to public health issues. So planning really and public health should be well integrated together, not in a reactive manner, but really more of a responsive. If you remember, when we started Charlotte Future 2040, our comprehensive plan, we started with the notion of equity. And there were 5 different elements. One of those elements was creating a healthy and sustainable Charlotte, and really living in that space between what people do when they are out of the house and when they are at work, and making sure that we make a connection between sidewalks, so people can exercise, open spaces so people can get out, And now, with the pandemic, it's even become more important to do that because it's allowing us to rethink some of those assumptions that we had when we started the whole process. For example, assumptions about density, assumptions about transit, assumptions about designing of balconies, how deep will they be, assumptions about open spaces, how connected should they be, assumptions about streets, were they designed for people or for vehicles? And so we need to rethink that even further as we go forward during this pandemic period.
But you're nearing the end of the planning phase for this 2040 plan, if I'm not mistaken. So how is this throwing a wrench into the works at this point?
Actually, no. As tragic as COVID-19 has been for us as a city and a state and really nationally and globally, I'll say one advantage for us as a city was because we were right in the middle of our comprehensive planning process when this happened. So being able to pivot wasn't very hard for us to do. We're right now in the third phase of it. This plan is not due for adoption rather until spring of 2021. Mm-hmm. Right about the time we went on a shutdown, we had our last in-person public meeting in March. And at that meeting, we were testing out some big ideas, what we call framework policies, like creation of 10-minute neighborhoods for our city over the next 20 years, having housing access for all, neighborhood diversity and inclusion, combining transit and trail in terms of their orientation towards development, creating a safe and equitable mobility for Charlotte. But one of those policies also was creating healthy and active communities. And so it's not really thrown a wrench into our work. It's really made the work even more important right now that some of those things that we started back then has to even be more focused right now in terms of engaging people to contribute and to talk to us about what do we need to do with regards to design? Well, what do we need to do with regards to regulations? So it's really been it's a blessing in disguise for us in planning in terms of how we can make sure that we prepare even for these types of situations in the future.
Let me ask you a similar question about social justice, because much of the unrest that we are seeing in the streets is not just about police. It's about systemic racism. Both recognized and unrecognized. It has also to do with the economic divide, the haves and have-nots, and where that puts people geographically within any city in this country, including our own. So it has to do with segregation. It has to do with opportunity or lack of opportunity, etc. When did you see this as something that you could address as a city planner in this 2040 plan or beyond?
Very important. As you know, Charlotte is not alone in terms of how planning practices of the past and zoning practices of the past, whether you talk about redlining or, steering people in one direction of development in the community, that's a terrible legacy for us as a city. And so even without the racial injustice that we're dealing with right now and protests in our city and across the nation, it's something we were always focused on as part of a comprehensive plan. But let me take it a little bit further, that it's not just enough to focus on it as part of a comprehensive plan. In other words, you have that crescent or the arc where you have the highest concentration of minority population, Africans and Hispanics and immigrants. But you also have the wedge where you have the highest concentration of white population and most affluent people. How do we make sure that we begin to change that narrative? That's part of what the comprehensive plan is about. The whole notion of the intersection between place and race should be taken very importantly, because African Americans, for the most part, when you look at where they live and whether they are Hispanics as well, they live in communities where you have highest concentration of pollutants and toxic uses, gas stations, for example, industrial uses. How can we make sure that our policies in this comprehensive plan and our regulations, eventually in our Unified Development Ordinance, begin to change the story? How do we make sure that we have investments in the crescent? So so that people in the Crescent don't have to drive all the way 30 minutes an hour away to get a well-paying jobs. That's, again, it's part of why we're talking about these 10-minute neighborhoods, creation of 10-minute neighborhoods where wherever you live within Charlotte, you should be able to have access to well-paying jobs, open spaces, recreation. That, in my mind, begins to address the issue of racial injustice, because unless we deliberately and regularly dismantle the effects of segregation, we will just stay stuck on 50 out of 50. We have to do that.
So what I'm hearing you say is that a lot of the things that need addressing today that have come to the forefront, bubbled up to the surface because of racial unrest and because of COVID-19, are things that you are already building into this plan. Does this give you the tools you need to push harder for those things?
It does allow us. These policies really allow us to redirect our investments in areas where they are most needed. William Shakespeare, interestingly enough, right, said that what is the city but the people? And that was one of the first lines that I learned as an urban planner. What is the city but the people? And I like to push that further by saying that people are the ones who make cities matter. And if people make cities matter, cities should make people matter, especially people who have been marginalized for so long, Black and brown. And unless we begin to redirect our investments that really show and demonstrate that our people matter, especially the marginalized people who live so far out of where you have accessibility to things, unless we begin to show that, we're not really putting the central piece of the plan together. And that central piece of the plan is people. And so William Shakespeare wasn't a planner, but he was right on. What is the city but the people?
But these two things that we're facing in the world today, the COVID-19 pandemic and the cries in the United States for social and racial justice, these are things that, to me, appear to be incredibly urgent. They need fixes and responses need to happen now. City planning is a long glacial process, it seems to me. We've been talking about the 2040 plan on this program with you for several years. And as you say, it's going to be presented next year, 2021, and it looks out to 2040. So how quickly can you help fix things through city planning?
That's really a great question, Mike. Thank you. So, yes, planning can be long term. But there's also a short plan approach to things. One of the things that we are looking forward to doing, because we plan to have a draft, a presentation of this to the council right in the fall. There's certain policies out of that draft final plan that we can begin to actually apply to development process and applications today. When we say 2040 plan, what we're saying is that this is what we'd like to see at the end of a 20-year horizon. That does not prevent us from reviewing these plans periodically every 3 to 5 years, for example, and make sure that we continue to respond to issues of our times, things that are trending at a particular point in time. The overall goal, frankly, is that we create mixed-use communities, mixed income, mixed generational communities, right? If we're going to do that, though, we need to start looking at some of our developments today through the lens of comprehensive plan policies.
Taiwo Jioba is not only Charlotte's Director of Planning, Design, and Development, he's also an Assistant City Manager for the City of Charlotte. We're going to continue our conversation about city planning, the 2040 plan, and planning in the age of COVID and social unrest. We'll talk about specifically about those two aspects of city planning and the 2040 plan when we come back. Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, committed to drivers that share Mazda's passion that cars make driving matter. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. Taiwo Jioba is our guest. He's an assistant city manager, but he, more importantly, is the director of planning, design, and development for the City of Charlotte. We had been on the program several times. We've spent a lot of time talking about new zoning ideas and new development ideas. For a long time, Charlotte had no city planner, and now we do, and we're working on this 2040 plan. Let's talk specifically about two of the key things that are happening in our world today and how that's impacting you and that plan. Urban renewal has always resulted in gentrification and the pushing out of lower income populations, and that has led to problems in our schools, problems in society, to decreased upward mobility that Charlotte has a significant problem with, and to a great extent to the underlying causes for the social unrest that we are seeing in the streets because we don't congregate with each other. We see each other as the other, and that's never healthy. You recently tweeted, quote, "We need to rewrite the rules that have made it virtually impossible to build affordable housing in wealthy neighborhoods. In effect, segregation, you say, reduces the size of a city, limits the number of people, the number of interactions, the number of ideas." So if we'd had a better understanding of all that you just said in that tweet all along, would we be in the situation we are today? Would we have taken that understanding to design Charlotte in a different way?
Yes, we will. And that is the thing. We have to change the way we've been doing business. We give a lot of excuses sometimes. And planning and zoning has a role in forcing us to rethink some of those ways of doing business, our policies that have really led to displacement of people. When you think about it, I think it was Policy Link that pretty much said that there are fewer sidewalk connections in Black communities, right? There are fewer open space and recreational facilities. These are people who have been separated by highways and roadways, and the street lighting is not even adequate for people to be able to walk at night and feel safe about it. And so many times we often think that the excuse is just human behavior. But the fact is that our past planning practices and policies brought us here. And I mean, give or take, if someone is moving to Charlotte and they are likely African American or Hispanic, and they earn maybe 60 or 80% of the area median income, which is about 79,100, and they're coming from out of town, the likelihood is that a real estate person will steer them in a particular direction where people like them live. That's not fair, and that is not right. That's called racial steering. And that really perpetuates and builds on that legacy of segregation. But if someone else comes in here, has very good income, maybe even 80% of the AMI, but their color is different, it's likely that that same real estate person will try so hard to look for something for them in South Charlotte. And so we need to start changing the way that is now. I don't blame the real estate person. I think that they're doing their work, but planning has contributed to that, and zoning regulations and prices have contributed to that. I believe that I will not be doing my job as a city's planning director, and our planners and designers will not be doing their job if we don't force this conversation about race and place and inequity. And how can we make sure that we create a path for people to move from hope to change? That's our job. I think I've said it before that, you know, hope is not a strategy. Equity creates that path that you take people from hope to change. For example, as part of our comprehensive plan, we continue to talk about not just eliminating single family zoning, but expanding single family zoning areas to allow different forms of housing that people can afford. Recently had a Ballantine Reimagine petition at council that really proposed affordable housing units in Ballantine. That number has not been seen in a long time that they are proposing. We need more of that. And so I like us to see developers come in and say, this is really what we're going to do for our city, so that anyone, regardless of where they live in Charlotte, can still fundamentally have a successful and livable existence.
So we've talked a lot in this city and others about racial equity and about bringing people together as opposed to putting them in different parts of the city because of their economic status, which happens to correlate to race and minority status in many cases. So we've been doing it haphazardly, and considering these things that you've been talking about have been kind of an afterthought. With this 2040 plan, you're trying to put it front and center. You're trying to make it an integral part of what happens here in the future, remaking a city to be racially equal. And some of the things you just talked about are part of this plan, and that is putting different kinds of housing than we currently have in neighborhoods today in those neighborhoods.
In those neighborhoods, yes, in different places. So I'll say this also, that when communities plan for racial and health equity, whether they are planning it for to improve the lives of African Americans or Hispanics or low-income people, we really are improving the lives and economic opportunity for all of us. I mean, so, you know, if you improve the lives and, you know, the rate you're planning for racial and health equity for one demographic, you really do need to improve the lives of every one of us so we can have access. If I live in South Charlotte today, what is to say that my son's partner or my grandkids will not have friends in the Crescent? And so if I am doing something for me, I should do it cohesively for us as a city, not looking at just one part of the city as better than another. It begins also with our schools system. I mean, because when people move here, the first thing they want to know is the quality of schools, right? I mean, it's so important. So there's pressure on CMS to work with us here to make sure that, you know, when people want to choose where they live, they're also comfortable making those choices as well.
We know that we're low on social capital in Charlotte, that people from different backgrounds don't really congregate outside of having to work together in a work environment. And now that we're not working together in a work environment, this might even be exacerbating that social distancing and that lack of social capital. We've laid a lot of the responsibility of bringing us together and laying the groundwork for racial equity on the schools, in the hopes that if kids go to school from different backgrounds, that they'll grow up knowing that, hey, they're not so much different than I am, and in their adult lives, they will continue those relationships. We know that doesn't work. It hasn't worked very well. How do you know that engineering this togetherness through city planning will work any better?
I wouldn't even call it engineering. I'll call it visioneering. How do we have the kind of a robust vision where, you know, we pull together, because the city does not control everything. I mean, take, for example, Charlotte Mecklenburg Schools. We've got to work with them as our partners. The city doesn't have control, of course, over the parks and recreation aspect as well. One of the things that we've been doing over the last several weeks, pretty much since April, once we went on lockdown, was, if you remember, we have a group of ambassadors and advisors for our comprehensive plan, about 314 of them. And then we also have another group of our ordinance advisory committee, roughly about 40-some of them. We've been meeting regularly. We've been meeting regularly throughout this lockdown virtually. However, with our comprehensive plan ambassadors, one of the things that we did in the last few weeks was to have work sessions, a work session that focuses on schools, a work session that focuses on parks and recreation, work session that focuses on health and sustainability, involving our county public health in the conversation, involving our county parks and rec in the conversation, involving our schools in the conversation. It's not just about the school. This is a system. If racism is a systemic thing, combating it has to also be systemic. I mean, systematic, rather. We've got to do it in such a way that we're not just looking at one element of it, of the system, but it's got to be everything that we look at. So it can't just be housing. It cannot just be jobs. It's got to be all of these things together.
So you have said, or I think you believe, that if embraced by the city, when you present this plan next year, if embraced and adopted, and developers get on board, et cetera, that this could change the future story of Charlotte. So what would that story be?
The story that I like for Charlotte is that everyone who comes here believes that they belong here. They believe that they can choose anywhere that they want to live and do or do business. They believe that if they want to get to work, there is a means of mobility that can get them there. When we delivered this to council in April, May for adoption in 21, we will also at the same time be delivering what we call a strategic mobility plan to council at the same time. And that plan is pretty much developing how we integrate vehicle, pedestrian, bicycles, transit, safety plans, and set new mobility goals for our city. Because I totally believe this, that the only way this comprehensive plan and the policies in it can succeed is if we also have a very efficient and effective mobility system. Because how people move and how they live, they're really connected, right? So that's the type of Charlotte that I see. That if I work at Charlotte Douglas Airport, but I live in another part of town, I don't have to drive to get there. Driving then becomes a choice. I should be able to get there and still be able to drop my kids off at childcare and do business. I don't see a city where we should be having what I call a two-seat ride for 2 hours. So I leave my house and I have to transfer 1 hour later or maybe transfer into another system and wait for 60 minutes to get to where I need to go. So one of the things that we're doing right now to prepare us for that kind of future is that CATS is looking at its top performing routes and really improve their frequencies so that they will move every 15 minutes. And if you remember, Mayor Lyles established the Charlotte Moves Task Force right at the beginning of this year, but they did not start meeting until May to really talk about the type of Charlotte we want to create when it comes to mobility options for people. Task Force headed by former Mayor Gant of about 25 people to really connect that comprehensive plan, which is land use plan, to a mobility plan, which really get people to move seamlessly.
What do you see as the biggest impediment to writing this new story?
I truly believe that the biggest impediment, it's easy to say funding, but I'm not going to go there. I think it's really changing people's mindset. That's one thing that planning can't do. It's people really changing their mindset. We go to all these wonderful cities, whether they be London or be Toronto or Seattle or Vancouver, and we come home, we say things like, you know, I was there for 2 weeks. I never drove a car. You know, I was there. I stayed in this place. It was walkable. I ride bicycle. But then we come home, but we don't really want to do it. Like somebody said during a rezoning petition hearing last week, I'm okay if this affordable housing is in another part of the city. I just don't want it to be near me. I mean, That's the part of mindset that needs to change. We go to all these wonderful cities, cosmopolitan, and we brag about these things, but then we come home and we want it elsewhere. I think we need to change our mindset. There's a long way to get there, but I believe we will.
Let's shift the focus for a second to the impact of the coronavirus on city planning and the 2040 plan specifically. This pandemic pushes against our human desires to congregate, to be social creatures with each other. And that really is how cities function best, because everybody's densified and they're close together and they go to restaurants and shops and be on the sidewalks, etc. A lot of people doing things in close proximity with each other. We can't do that for the moment, and a lot of people don't want to do that at the moment. So who wants to be on a crowded bus? Who wants to be at a street festival right now? Is this a blip, or is rethinking a city to design it around being close in all these different activities smart?
I wouldn't call COVID-19 a blip. Even after it goes away, we find vaccine, and this will eventually move on. We will be hit with another form of pandemic at one point or the other. That's just the way it's always been throughout human history. But what I understand, though, is that every data that we've looked at tells us that COVID-19 has not been an indictment on density. Maybe human behavior is an issue. I mean, because COVID-19, we have people with infections, right, in rural areas that are not necessarily dense. Right. And HDR, the firm HDR, actually came up with a report recently that actually shows the density and infection rates of different cities, Denver, San Francisco, Seoul, South Korea. And for each one of those, showed that even though Seoul is the most dense of those three cities, that Denver actually has the highest infection rate, despite the fact that it's the less dense. of those three cities. When you think about New York, which was really badly hit as well, Manhattan has about 72,000 people per square mile, and Staten Island has about 8,000 people per square mile. It's actually infected more people in Staten Island, which has less density, than in Manhattan itself. So it's not necessarily about density as it is about human behavior and overcrowding. How can we address those, though, going forward? And that is one of the things that we're doing right now is we want to begin to review our development petitions with our folks in public health, the county, so that when we get development applications, we want them to talk to us about what is healthy for our people. Creation of more open spaces, which is part of why we have the shared streets program, where we decided to close some of our streets to through traffic in the last few weeks. We are starting a second phase this Saturday. Designing places for people so that we can continue to maintain that distancing. It's going to have impact on our sidewalks, obviously. But, you know, Rome wasn't built in a day, so goes the popular saying. I think it's going to take us a lot of efforts to get there and address that.
And yet recent studies based on what's happening with COVID-19 show that nearly a third of Americans are considering moving to less densely populated areas. Are they jumping the gun, these folks? Is this just a short-term trend? What does this mean for places like Charlotte that are benefiting from the influx of people coming here?
Yeah, I think the National Realtors had a webinar the other day, was it a couple of weeks ago, and said that Charlotte is one of the cities that's top of mind for people when they want to move, obviously, because they're thinking, oh, yeah, it's worse in New York, it's worse in all these bigger places, and they want to move here. But again, like I said, density and COVID-19 infections are not necessarily, equal. And so I would say that despite that, though, we should still plan smartly. If we're going to plan smartly, it means putting density in the right places, along transit corridors, in areas where people can have access to amenities. It goes back again to what I said about creation of 10-minute neighborhoods. So pandemic or no pandemic, nobody enjoys unnecessary overcrowding, except when you go to watch a game, you know, to go to watch a concert. And so we need to plan in a smart and healthy way.
Taiwo Jioba is the Director of Planning, Design, and Development for the City of Charlotte and an Assistant City Manager. We're going to come back and talk more about COVID-19 and its impact on city planning and also about some of the plans that are part of this 2040 plan that you've already alluded to. Stay with us at Charlotte Talks on WFAE. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. Taiwo Jioba is our guest, Director of Planning, Design, and Development, and an Assistant City Manager. Before I get back into our conversation, Taiwo, a listener has emailed, what is the purpose behind our city's planning director also serving as our Assistant City Manager? I would never have asked that question, so I'm going to get an answer to it.
Yeah, well, really good question. As a matter of fact, I believe that that question is reserved for the city manager because I serve at his pleasure. However, I see an advantage there because not only am I planning director, but in my position as assistant city manager, I also work very closely with our director of transportation and with our Charlotte Area Transit System executive director. So the three of us, planning, transportation, public transit, get to work together. If I was just a planning director, yes, we'll continue to work together. But in this role, I have even more influence in terms of how what they do influence what I do and what I do, how that influences what they do as well. But that's a fair question.
I was going to ask you, and you've kind of already answered it, but I want to get a greater clarification. I was going to ask you about the impact of COVID-19 on this 2040 comprehensive plan that you're still engaged in. And we the city has been engaged, even before that, in conversations about creating greater density, live, work, walk neighborhoods where you're 10 minutes away from anything you want to do. But that requires a different kind of neighborhood than Charlotte has traditionally had, and we're talking about increasing mass transit options. And I'm wondering, had we already achieved this? If we were having this conversation in 2045 and everything in the plan had been achieved, and COVID-19 comes along, would it have been a recipe for disaster? We're all living on top of each other. We're all taking mass transit, trains and buses to get from one point to the other because driving has been discouraged and we've told people you don't need cars. would we be living in a catastrophic situation right now?
I don't think so. Cities have always been resilient. I mean, cities have faced a lot of terrible situations over the centuries, and cities have been resilient, and they always found a way to bounce back. Because again, where do you have most of the amenities, whether they be healthcare related, your hospitals, your colleges, your jobs, well-paying jobs, they're all at the city. And so it's really about designing them smartly. Like I said, prior to us going on break, on a short break, is that COVID-19 is not an indictment on density, because some of the places where we've actually had the least infections are also some of the dense and less the least dense places, like Singapore.
Do you understand why that is? Why lesser density has actually caused a greater incidence of this virus?
I also think it's because people have easier access to healthcare facilities. I also think it's because they have easier access to purchasing things that will, you know, allow them to take care of their environments as easy as they can. Now, will it have an impact? Yes, of course. Everything has an impact, because most of us, we react the moment something happens to protect ourselves, which is fine. But usually afterwards, when we bounce back, all these investments that we've put in place continue to benefit us overall. The issues that were with us prior to COVID, for the most part, they will stay with us. Hmm. The need for housing, the need for many housing units, as a matter of fact, the need for transit, will still be with us. And so the issue of equity, or inequity rather, will still stay with us. And so we need to plan for this, not just in response to COVID-19, but as a city that wants to maintain competitiveness and that also wants to continue to provide for its people. So regardless of what happens, we should build a city that's resilient and sustainable.
Charlotte has seen a lot of office buildings go up in its central core and down into South End and other parts of the city. We see a lot of apartment buildings going up in there in those areas because people want to live near where they work. But now, with this virus, we are learning that we can work almost from anywhere. Does it concern you? Does it concern Charlotte that maybe this building boom will slow down now, because who needs an office?
You know, when we get there, I'm sure we will cross that bridge. But we have not seen any slowdown at all. As a matter of fact, we continue to see an increase in rezoning petitions being submitted. A number of development permits have not slowed down significantly. And so we have not seen that at all. But one thing that I will say is that just as it is happening in Charlotte, so it is happening in all the bigger cities. You know, there are now companies like Twitter or Facebook now telling their people they can go work anywhere they choose to. So you're going to find people leaving California or some of those places to move to places like Charlotte so they can remote work. And so we still have to plan for that.
And you've talked a lot about moving people around and not having to put them in a car and clog highways, which become increasingly clogged no matter how many highways you build, and the commute times increase no matter what you do. You can expand the lanes of traffic. It doesn't matter. So giving them options may help that a little bit. And one of those options is very expensive. It's light rail. Mm-hmm. If we're going to be working from home, do we need that option? And that's an option that locks us in for years to come.
And that definitely, we will not be smart if we only invest in one mode of mobility. So light rail just happens to be that one mode. There are also other ways. I mentioned before the Charlotte Moves Task Force that Mayor Lyles established, been led by former Mayor Harvey Gantt. As a matter of fact, they are meeting tonight at 6 p.m. Part of the goal of that task force is to look at all our mobility options. Rail transit, bus transit, bike trails, ped trails, other micromobility options that we may have, so that together we have a comprehensive, or what I call a transformational mobility network. So you don't have to take the train if you don't want to. You don't have to take the bus if you don't want to. But if it takes away your ability to choose something, then it's not worth it. The effort is to be able to say that people have different options to be able to do what they need to do. Does that make that investment not necessary? Not really, because it does add another option for people.
And you've asked the question, can we put faster moving mobility options on some of the roads that have been opened due to a lack of congestion? What does that mean?
Yeah, and that is true. I mean, for example, so you look at Providence. I mean, you're driving on Providence now. It's not as congested as it used to be several months ago. What can you do with that? So we do have, as part of our FY21 budget that council is adopting, to really invest in congestion mitigation. What does that look like? We're going to look at three areas in our city: the University City area, the Steel Creek area, and South Charlotte, and look at those areas where we have key congestion intersections, congested intersections, and identify solutions to those. What are those solutions? I don't know. Will they be, queue jumps for buses so that buses are not stuck in traffic? Will they be a way to improve services on our buses so that they can get people from A to B to C? We're going to be taking a good look at that before the end of this year into next year as well. So there are ideas. Like I said earlier, CARTS is because CARTS wants to maintain social distancing on its buses. It also means that we cannot carry the same number of people we were carrying on a particular bus prior to COVID-19 striking. So we've taken out some seats on our buses. If we're going to take about 20 people on one bus, we also want to make sure that someone else who is waiting does not have to wait for a long time. So we're making improvement in frequencies on 10 of our routes so that they can pick people up on time, but also be able to do it in such a manner that is healthy for folks.
You've talked before, and I think it's part of the 2040 plan, of using these plans to create a sense of place. And one way you have been doing that right now, you've been working on putting murals, artistic works at intersections. And I believe that you are in large part responsible for the Black Lives Matter mural on Tryon Street. Correct me if I'm wrong. How
Yes.
do murals and artwork at intersections or on streets, on the surface of the street, improve quality of life and sense of place?
It's very, very good question, Mike. So it's important as once we got into this phase where the governor started to reopen state gradually, one of the things that we felt could help people was to also open up streets, close them to through traffic, or open them up to people, whether they're on wheelchair or with their kids on rollerblades and all of that. And we wanted to make sure that it's not just enough to get people out on the street, but you also want to create some degree of, attraction, something that makes the streets come alive and vibrant and becomes a gathering place rather than just a place for vehicles. When you put art in the public realm, it does that. It makes it attractive. It creates, that vibrant energy that you want in a place. It becomes an opportunity for people to really be able to get out. And we also created some can-do signs that says, "Hey, why are you doing this? Understand that we're still in a pandemic period. Continue to maintain social distancing, physical distancing, and wear your mask." And I believe that Tryon for us has become a major part of that. Now we've done this. I believe we're doing this in about 15 different neighborhood streets through Charlotte. I was reading a quote from one of the artists yesterday, and I thought it was so beautiful what he said, that when I walk out on the street during this time that's so depressing, I want something to lift up my spirit. That's what arts in the public realm does for people.
So, in Europe, there are piazzas in city plazas where the traffic doesn't go, but people do, and that's I guess that's what you're trying to create with this shared streets program, because you're providing opportunities for people to walk, for people to gather, for people to use their bicycles and wheelchairs and whatever other means of non-automotive transportation they have at their disposal. How do these work to make the city better in a city where congestion is already a problem for drivers?
So right now, it is not a problem. I think
Right now it's not, but prior to COVID-19, it was becoming a problem, yes.
Yes, so I think it's really about helping us to understand that, to get there. And like I said before, you mentioned Europe. I mean, we go to Rome, we go to Paris, we go to all these wonderful cities. We like the fact that people can sit out and have outdoor dining. We like the fact that musicians can be out there, you know, strutting on their guitar, or their violin, and making beautiful music. But when we come home, those same streets are occupied by vehicles. When you do that, you take away from quality of life. I think that by closing some of these streets to through traffic, it's really helping us to appreciate that the investment in streets and in roadways is not just, should not, at least should not just be for vehicles, but for the people who made those investments.
I don't want to run out of time before we talk a little bit more deeply about some of the other aspects of this 2040 plan. We've kind of hit on them in the past, but one of the things you want to do to increase diversity and to increase the availability of people being able to live in all parts of town, not based on their economic status, is to change zoning laws. And that would allow things like tiny homes, townhomes, duplexes, triplexes, all to be in the same neighborhood, and maybe even ending this idea of exclusive single-family home neighborhoods. Is this something that the average person wants? Is it something developers want? Is it something that planners want? What would that be like?
Planners want it. I know developers like it. Last time I was on your show and you asked me that question, I believe WFAE did a non-scientific polling, and there was about 66%, if I recall, of people who felt that it was a really good idea to create a smart city. As part of our own comprehensive planning process during our engagement, when we also started to receive input from the people, almost 70% of our responders actually also said that they like the idea. So again, it's something to be in love with an idea. It's another thing to embrace it when it happens. And so that's why we are not talking about elimination as much as expanding areas where we have exclusively single family residential zoning right now, to allow homes where you can age and stay in place, where you know your kids can live in tiny homes in your backyard, maybe with accessory dwelling units. During the age of coronavirus and people have to isolate, tiny homes become so important, especially if they are in your backyard. It's an opportunity for people to be able to live in an environment where they've lived for so many years, enjoy the same friendships and relationships that they've had for so many years. So we're not moving away from that idea. Mm-hmm. I still truly believe that is one way to undo the legacy of segregation and inequity when you have diversity of housing in different parts of a city. And it's also one way to create equity.
We have about 45 seconds left, and I know that you're going to present this 2040 plan next year to council. They'll vote on it. It will go forward from there or not. And Daryl emails, given that so many of the limitations we have now in transit and housing and mobility trace back to zoning, when will we actually start to see real changes in the zoning process to support smarter growth and a better quality of life? About 30 seconds left.
As soon as possible. But once the council adopts the plan in April, we plan to bring our Unified Development Ordinance, which is a rewrite of our zoning ordinance, to them for adoption by the end of next year, and remap the entire city to allow them to be able to do some of these things that we just talked about.
And does the new rezoning for Eastland Mall include some of the things that you're envisioning in the 2040 plan?
Yes.
What about Ballantyne?
Yes, for Ballantyne, for Eastland Mall, and it does make me happy. We can do better, but I think those are really good steps forward.
Taibo Jayoba is the Director of Planning, Design, and Development for the City of Charlotte and an Assistant City Manager. Always a pleasure to talk to you. Thank you for the hour.
Thank you so much, Mike. Thanks for having me.
Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, committed to Mazda's focus to ensure every element of a car is designed around the driver. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com.